Welcome to Radio 5G, where we sort fact from fiction, conspiracy from falsehood, reality from the unknown. And by doing so, we change the collective consciousness of humanity. A production of CosmicReality.com. Welcome to the Cosmic Soup Show. This is September 14th, 2025. And we decided today that unless a guest shows up that was scheduled but didn't show, that we're going to just talk about whatever comes up because there's certainly a lot of things happening, especially this week. Mark Joseph is with me and Callias is with me. So Callias, good morning your time. It's afternoon my time.
Good morning.
And I'm assuming that you do have thoughts about this last week.
Oh, yeah. A few here and there, for sure.
Okay. And Mark, how are you doing?
Doing good, thank you. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Well, the Charlie Kirk's assassination is, of course, what's dominated everything. And last night on Say What, we did a show that was basically dedicated to discussing not only what happened, but the why. Why does this stuff keep happening? And I don't think you've seen it, Mark. I just put it up on Rumble. It's in the podcast. It's in the archives of Cosmic Reality, but it was a very, very good kind of like overview of all of the things that are involved in this. But you want to start it out, or you want Callias to just, you know, give his thoughts about it?
Yeah, he can start.
We put you on first here, Callias.
Oh, nice. Thank you. Yeah, no, it's you're right. It's completely dominated, you know, pretty much all the discourse everywhere lately. And I find it, you know, you would think that like someone incredibly, you know, like a public figure, like an actor or somebody like Bob Hope or somebody that, you know, had been ingrained in the Western consciousness over time died, you know, the way they've elevated and people that, you know, didn't even really care for him have been, you know, kind of crying about it. And it's been really, really interesting. And I think that's a major tell for me as to why it happened. You know, they wanted everyone's emotional attention directed towards this event. And of course, you know, they're going to exploit the hell out of that for whatever end. And that was the first thing that caught my attention. The confusion about whether or not it was a controlled op or a psyop or some kind of staged event, I'm still on the fence about. I'm not really 100% sure. My first, when I first saw the video, I was very, I couldn't really tell because it did appear to be, you know, AI. I was my first impression, especially with the, when the shot actually hit him, you know, the blood coming out of his neck, it didn't seem real. And so I've been looking into all the different angles, you know, the staged event, psyop and stuff. The other point of contention I had with everything was his wife the other day giving the, you know, the speech and I guess the eulogy, I suppose you could say, that seemed very, very staged. And my instincts told me something was very, very strange with all this. But at the end of the day, I mean, I don't really put a whole lot of energy into it. I just know that, you know, I have a good feeling as to what's going to come next. And I think that's the important thing. It's not whether he's alive or dead, if it was real or fake. It's what comes next is what's important.
Yeah, Nancy, looking forward to the Say What show. Three of you guys, and one of them, Ani's really cool too. She being a shaman, and then with your experience and Jan's, you know, it's always a packed, quality packed show. Well, to that, because I know you guys are able to look at the thing not just through social media and online, but in different ways. And obviously, I listened to the whole thing, but what did you guys get as far as a energetic feel of? I mean, is it even the real person? Because what we constantly hear the last, I don't know how many years, is central casting. That phrase is constantly repeated, and we know a lot of these people aren't the original people. Same goes with Charlie, but. Yeah, is it? And I totally agree with what Kalis is saying that, AI and then the physics of how blood moves. And I try to keep up with people who are veterans and their analysis. Obviously, you guys. And because of your guys' battlefield experience, you have more instinct, intuition, and the other beyond the five senses to be able to see this multidimensionally. And like for example, a couple of my go-tos are Jeff Prather and Michael Jaco, and they both gave the breakdowns, and one says it's real, one says it's fake, and they both have experience, having worked in the various intel agencies. And anyway, yeah, what did you guys gather as far as an energy field from that event?
Well,
Oh,
okay,
go
go
ahead,
ahead.
Betsy. No,
No, go
it's
ahead.
your turn. Your turn.
Well, I could go on for a while. You answer his question.
It seemed a very noticeable shift, sort of like what happened with 9/11. It's almost like they casted a new spell, so to speak. It's difficult for me to kind of put it into words that the average listener would be able to sort of gel with. It's there was a noticeable shift, and the timing of it is very interesting. But again, it was like this huge attention shift, this huge momentum shift, that interestingly I don't really feel it now as much as I did, the first couple of days. But there definitely was an energy component to it. And again, we see the typical numerology, with these PSYOPs, the number 33 coming up, and others, which personally I don't put a whole lot of stock into myself, but it's interesting that these things keep coming up the way they do when these events happen. So I think there was definitely a sort of occult aspect to it. And I can't really quite put my finger on what, but yeah, absolutely. I think there was a big energy shift similar to 9/11.
Well, you and I have a distinct difference of view on reality. And the I'm just going to go over it for our listeners to understand the kind of the overview of it. I was doing a recording actually with Mark, and I hung up from the recording and turned on the television, and it took 3 minutes before I realized what the shooting was with it that was on Fox that they were talking about. And Jason Kavitz was up there, and he was one of the Fox hosts, and he was so distraught that I couldn't believe he was even holding it together. And he was a very good friend of Charlie's. If you knew Charlie, and many people are beginning to understand Charlie, everybody that met him thought he was their best friend. And they all said that. And that was the beauty of him, that he was engaged with you. He would look at you. He was like an amazing spirit. This one said, I never even talked to him, but I've seen him in at Fox, and he has just a presence about him that is something very, very different. Now, I'll get back to Jason in a minute, but the first time I saw Charlie Kirk was when he was 20, when he was 16 years old. And he got on a Fox show with two other kids, 16 years old. And this guy is sitting between these two children, but this guy was not a child. First off, he was a very, very tall, big guy. He was taller than most everybody else he ever stood next to. He was unbelievably articulate, unbelievably profound in what this 16-year-old was saying. And you don't forget this kid. Nobody forgot him, because from 16, he got, people saw him on this particular show, and they were all, not all, but certainly the important ones were very intrigued in him, and they began to reach out to him because they felt that he was very special. And because of the influence of these people, that yes, they were influencers and that they had a lot of money and they were very active in politics. And he was told by one of them, I don't even remember what his guy's name was, I didn't know him, but Charlie mentions him in one of the interviews that I've seen, that this man told him not, he said, don't waste your time with college. So when he was 18, he did go into college, but as soon as he got there, he realized, no, this is not, this is terrible. And so he's 18 years old, and now he goes out to the same people and other people that he was being introduced to, and told him, I have this mission. I want to make the messaging that we have available to kids, because they're looking for truth and they're not finding it. And all I want to do is set up this organization that is, accepts conservative people, because one of the problems with the conservative movement is that they were being shut down to even talk on campuses. Their lives were threatened. Riley, she ended up in a room and couldn't get out because the crowd was demanding that she come out. And I mean, it was like horrendous things that these young people were going through, just trying to get their message out. So that's what Charlie's focus was on the young people, because he wanted them to have some place where they could go and feel safe and feel like they could say what was on their minds, talk the truth or their truth. And he went from an 18-year-old who had a vision in his mind to, at 31 when he died, he had 1,000 employees, he had millions and millions of dollars of donation, he had Turning Point USA centers all over the world, and everybody that was involved with it were extremely involved with it. It became their mission. Now, what was he saying? Well, a lot of us, and me included, his devotion to Christ, Jesus, and propagating that particular philosophy is not something I feel comfortable with for a lot of reasons, but I understand it's very, very important to a lot of people. And you mentioned his wife. I didn't ever, he, I was not a follower of his, but like I say, he was on Fox all the time. And I got this, every time I'd see he's coming on, I would make sure that I listened to him, because he was just such an amazing speaker. And the way that he could remember all sorts of facts and knit them together, and he would get kids to come up in these big get together events like he was having there, and there was a microphone, and he said, please, if you got something to say, please get on the microphone. And some of the exchanges that he had with these kids were so enlightening, because the kid is there saying, well, you're a fascist, and he'd say, well, exactly what is a fascist? And they couldn't define it. What they were saying to him was obviously what they had been taught to say, not what was in their minds. Now, he could have just dismissed them like a lot of people would, because what's the point? You're already mind controlled. But he didn't. He would engage with these people, and he would, in the end, you knew that this child was not sure now. When they got up to the microphone, they were sure, but now they're not sure. And it was his ability to understand the, and he was being helped. One of the things that they always said about him was that he got good people around him, really, really dedicated good people were drawn to him. So he had some very, very enlightened social media kind of people. And they would take and they would film all of these little exchanges. And eventually he had his own podcast. But you were able to hear somebody articulate in terms that really mattered. That you couldn't put him down as stupid or dumb or anything like that. And the way that he did it was with an incredible amount of compassion and patience. He never, that anybody saw, went after somebody. Every once in a while, he'd start laughing because what they had said was just so ludicrous. But he would work with that laughter. He says, I'm not trying to put you down. I'm just trying to, show you that what you're saying to me doesn't make any sense. So let's just look at what you're saying here. Let's take it apart. And that's how he was handling everything. Now, that's the Charlie that was there on stage doing his thing and just going to reach out and talk to people. And Jason was a good friend of his, and he was there, and he was only a few yards away from Charlie when Charlie got hit. I also am very familiar with Jason. And the question was finally asked to him. He described everything. And it was asked to him, well, what was your opinion on how badly he was hurt? And I knew he thought he was dead. He thought he saw him die. But he wouldn't say it. So because he said, I just really don't know. But I could tell that he thought it was a death shot. And his reaction to the whole thing was so emotional that he saw one of his best friends just killed violently in front of him. That I have no doubt in my mind that this was a real thing. You can't watch somebody who's standing right there when it happens to say, oh, yeah, it was, computer generated. No. You can't. It's impossible to not believe this poor man. He was so distraught, but holding it together. So that's the first thing regarding what you talked about. The other thing, let's take it to the other side of it. Who was the shooter? Why did he do it? What's behind all that?
Actually,
Well,
I'll just interject just briefly.
sure.
When it comes to the whodunit aspect of it, this is where it gets very, very, very tricky and very interesting. We're all familiar with the concept of the Patsy. And so when this first happened, you had this old man who himself was I believe Jewish, which was an interesting coincidence because in that area they are such a tiny minority. I mean, the odds of someone like that being, apprehended immediately, and he's screaming, shoot me now, shoot me now. And they arrest him immediately. Arrest him. Yeah, I think he had an airsoft gun, if I think it was, or a BB gun of some kind. And then they immediately let him go. And so, bam, right there you have what looks to be a very, effective diversion. It was a diversionary tactic in my mind, because when I first saw that, I was like, there's no way. I mean, this is an obvious, this guy is a plant of some kind. And so then they bring out the photos of the suspected shooter and who this person could be. And so there's some inconsistencies with the photographs that I've seen. I haven't really looked at it in depth, to be honest. I'm not that invested in it, but just the discourse lately over investigative, with investigative journalists with all this is so contradictory. There's no real consensus. So right there immediately you have confusion, which I think is an intended thing. They want everyone to be looking one way while something else is happening over there on the other side. So that is, the whodunit part is probably the one aspect of it that I wouldn't really jump to any sort of conclusion about. because like with all these types of things, it's usually not the person that takes the rap for it, in my opinion. That's just been my the conclusion I've kind of come to over the years when it comes to these things. So yeah, be very careful with the whodunit.
Well, the old man that you're talking about, he did not have a weapon. He had nothing on him. And I mean, when this happened, from the minute I left that show, Mark, I never turned the TV off. I saw the coverage all the way through till yesterday. I didn't turn the television on. There was one, this was when it was all very fresh and happening, and they arrested the guy right off the bat. So this one guy that was a witness, he was in the staff, he was with his wife, he was an elderly guy. He said, "That's not the man. I know this guy. This guy's semi crazy. He's not the man. He's not capable of it." So Fox, not knowing, this was interesting. The Fox guys, and I think it was the producers and it, talking to him, they cut that guy off barely. I mean, I realized he was being cut off, and it was because he was saying an alternative to the scenario that you just put out, okay? And they weren't sure. Fox wasn't sure. So instead of progressing down that interview a little more, I mean, the guy kept repeating himself, "It's not the right guy. I know this guy." Gave his name, said he goes to all these events. But he's a nobody. This he couldn't he there's no way he could have picked up a rifle and shot. So within, and I would say that was within a couple of hours of this, okay, him being arrested and everything, that this guy was talking. And so I'm going like, okay, all right. So it didn't surprise me that they let him out. I know nothing about the second person that they thought. Now, those pictures that they originally went out with, okay, was because they need they and it was FBI Director Pat Patel that ordered that those pictures, there's two of them, and he's walking up the stairwell to the roof, and he said, "I wanted those to go out even though they weren't the really good, because we needed people to help us identify him as quickly as we could." Well, that worked because his father saw those pictures. And so he went to his son. His son had driven, his car was there. He walked to the car, got in the car, and then drove 450 miles home to his parents' house where he was living with a transvestite. Okay. This adds a little layer to this whole story. And the father said to him, well, let me put it to you this way. The way that this was released was breaking news. A friend of this family, they contacted the police and said, "Come get him." So I know nothing about the guy. Nobody knew about who was the family member, none of that. But as it went through, like I say, the 3 days of just nonstop looking at this thing, when he got to his dad's and his dad asked him, "Were you involved in this?" He probably confessed, but the release of from the family friend was what they were he was asked, did he confess? And he said, well, he kind of implied it. He didn't want to say he confessed because of reasons I'm going to give you in a second. Well, then we find out that when he confronted his son said, "I'm going to commit suicide." And the father called in a friend of the family who was a pastor. Now, I don't think he was their pastor, but he was a pastor. But the other thing he was a sheriff, a deputy sheriff. So I think that the friend of the family was probably the same guy. And they were able to talk to Tyler and say, you know, "No, you can't do this. You know, it's a who," I don't know what they said, but he didn't get crazy. He didn't act out violently, and none of this sort of thing happened. He just sat there and waited for them to pick him up. The clothes that he had on, you know, we see the pictures and he's in black. Well, they were able to, because remember, they're looking at all the cameras, and they were able to actually see him jump off the roof, run down the street. They found him when he first came in. And when he first came in to the neighborhood, he's walking, and he's walking by a Ring camera. Now, the weirdest thing about it is this video had just been released, and they're talking to this guy that had been a witness, and somebody, I don't even know who he was. I just didn't get who he was. But as he's watching the video, he went, "Oh my God." He said, "I was standing in that very driveway in the house that's recording the Ring, not 45 minutes before this all happened." And so they're talking to a guy who was their na it was his neighborhood. It was his cousin's house that took the Ring thing. But it was very interesting because Tyler was limping. And as they analyzed the limp, they believed, and I think this is true, that the bolt action gun, which was an old World War II gun, I'm familiar with it, and he had it in his down his leg, because you can't take these things apart. Okay, so it's down his leg, and he's got his hand in his pocket holding the butt stock, the stock of it. So he has this limp, okay, which is the way that he got the rifle into the place without anybody noticing. And he's all in black, okay. But when they traced it back even further, they took it back further, they saw him in shorts and a t-shirt. And so he changed before he went into the event. So what you've got is that the family, the reaction of the family, and a lot of the authorities were saying it's very seldom that a family will actually do this. You know, they try to hide him, they try to do all sorts of things, but very seldom do you make this kind of a take this kind of action. And so now you've got his name, and you could talk to people, and the transvestite actually said, "Well, I didn't know that he was planning this or any of this, but here is some discourse or something like that. I'm not sure what it is. It's some kind of a gaming platform that you can also message back and forth. And on that, those messages, Tyler is talking to somebody. I don't know who. I don't know if it was a group or whatever, but he did say to them, 'I want to go back and retrieve the rifle.'" And there was another statement that he made. Now, all this could be ginned up. Maybe it's not all true, but as far as anybody can see, it's true. It's a messaging, and it was not, "Yeah, I'm going to go shoot the guy," or any of that. It was just little telltale signs. And he said, "Yeah, I hid it in the woods with a towel wrapped around it." Well, by the time he ever, I mean, they found that rifle. They'd already found that rifle before that messaging went through, or maybe at the same time. But it was right in the same time frame that, yes, that's exactly the gun that they found. So the one of the, I don't know if it was the original family friend or what, but they said that he had been to a dinner. A family dinner, like 3 or 4 days before, and that over the years he had become more politically active and more radicalized. And one of the other members of the family was having a discussion with him, and he said, "Kirk is going to be in Utah University." And, you know, they got into a conversation, and the statement made by the person that had it was that he really was filled with hate. The guy didn't like Kirk either, but he said this guy was kind of like emotionally something that he could make a comment on. He was trying to spill hate. So there's a lot of stuff that you might not have picked up on because, you know, the people that want to hear the other story, they don't listen to the full story. But I took the time to listen to the full story. And in my opinion, this was a very lost human being that got in his head. not to do evil. And this is what we concentrated on, say what was okay, so you got the players, you got the one that's the target and one that's just shooting. And because of other factors that I'll mention in a minute, we wanted to know what is in the head of the assassin. Why did he do this? And we worked it out. We'd all been thinking about it, and people on Say What are extremely, extremely educated in reality, real reality. And what it comes down to is that he didn't think he was doing a bad thing. He thought he was doing something heroic. Why? Well, because he had been told by all these different sources that Republicans are terrible people. They're evil. They're Nazis. They're fascists. MAGA people are absolutely devils. Very, very devil. I mean, the rhetoric that you hear that is leveled on Republicans, and Kirk became one of those people because he was so popular within young people. Young people knew him more than the adults. That he became the focus point for a lot of really, really terrible hate speech. So the proposition to the young mind is he is evil. He is Hitler. Well, if you had a chance to go back and kill Hitler as a child or before he became chancellor, as a moral human being, you would have a moral obligation to do something about it. So from, and I think that's why the kid didn't fight his dad. He could have committed suicide, but he didn't because he thinks he's a hero. He thinks he's done something good, not bad. And that's why having a pastor there could kind of like work this out with him. I don't know what was said, but he was calmed down. He wasn't going to hurt himself. So he's not a violent person to begin with. He's not so distraught, and he's not one of the pawns. If somebody shoots themselves, to me, this is, mind control, MK Ultra on steroids. But he didn't. So the reason we got into trying to figure this out was because each in our own way, with our own way of looking at it, really and truly came to the conclusion that this is what Charlie's mission was, to be a martyr. Not that he thought that way, but that God thought that way. And we all agreed that there was a massive change in the directory of the future because of this. Now, I come from it because I'm the oldest one in the room, and I was there when John Kennedy was assassinated. John Kennedy had the same kind of esteem that in young people's minds. We don't know what reality is. We just know what we've been living through is, go to school and play in the yard, none of that. But when Kennedy came onto the scene, especially in Massachusetts, because he was a senator and got a lot of press, when he came on the scene, it opened up myself as a 15-year-old and very uncounted others, young people, to have had gotten engaged in a political movement before they even understood anything. Before they understood Democrat or Republican. I didn't know Democrat, Republican. I didn't know what the Congress was. I didn't know any of that. But this man had such charisma. I'm talking about JFK. He had so much charisma, and it was so exciting. And the people around you were either yelling at him or, yelling for him. And you had a focus on him, and he became the representation of, especially when after he became president, the representation of being somebody to be completely admired. He had a great family growing up. He had a great family. He was married to a beautiful woman. He was articulate. He was fun. He laughed a lot. He was always smiling. I mean, all of the attributes that you can say Kennedy had, Charlie had him in the same way.
Well,
Did he look?
here's an interesting tidbit about JFK that I don't think most people really knew, is that a lot of that charisma and a lot of his speaking ability was heavily, heavily coached into him. And I would imagine something similar with Charlie as well. When JFK first started speaking, when he first got into politics, most voters in his district found him to be very, very off-putting, very, very odd, and very uncomfortable to be around. And so I forgot the guy's name, but there were quite a few people in the Democratic Party that actually had intelligence ties that actually coached him towards his charisma that we're all familiar with today. So he didn't start out that way. And Charlie, I'm not entirely sure, who handled him or who coached him in his early years, but it's a fascinating trajectory. And we all have to kind of explore the possibility that he was groomed for this type of role. It's very bizarre that somebody at the age of 18 is just going to explode into the public consciousness the way he did. That is, we should all ask, like, how did that happen? Like, what were the steps taken to allow that? So I just thought there was an interesting parallel between what you said with JFK's charisma and Charlie Kirk, because a lot of that, I'm certain, is coached. I don't think, once in a lifetime, maybe you'll see someone that has that charismatic ability to appeal to everybody. But JFK certainly didn't have it. He had to be trained.
Okay, first off, everybody has to be trained to do it. When Mark first got on this radio show, he kept clearing his throat because he was so nervous. He was not good at what he was doing. But it took time. It took experience getting out there. When I first started out, I started out in high school debate team. Okay, I was very used to being a public speaker. I was a military briefer. I had a lot of experience in it, but I certainly wasn't that way when I started out. So yeah, you always get trained. You always get better at the job you got. That's number one. Number two, yes, this was all preordained, but it's not from the sources that you're pointing to. This is something that is spiritual and God-driven. And I know that you do not feel that way. You're very obvious that you don't feel that way. But the thing that Charlie was bringing to everybody was we are in a spiritual battle. And that's exactly what I felt after JFK was assassinated, that this is not something that's right. This is something is wrong here. Something is very wrong here. And I spent the rest of my life, 60 plus years, trying to answer the questions that we're trying to answer about this particular event. And it wasn't until about maybe 2 years ago, Callies, that I suddenly said, and I mean, the more I would go down the pathway of learning, the more dark and evil it became. And I've known this was a spiritual battle probably all my life. But when Charlie started talking about it, it was something that nobody wanted to talk about. Nobody wanted to talk about God. That's one of the problems that they were having with the conservative people is that they were churchgoers. Oh, no, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. And I can understand that. Analysis of somebody that you're already indoctrinated by your church. Why try to tell you the truth? You're already indoctrinated. But that's the reality that we're facing, that it is a spiritual war, a war we're in. And so when you say that he from 18, everybody who talks about him, who loved him, they say the same thing you're saying. But they say it not because he was some black hat or white hat pawn that was developed to do this. No, they all believed that he was guided by God to go out there and to make this incredible, unbelievable company at virtually 18 years old. So, yes, I agree with you, right, but I don't think you're right about the source. And so when he became a martyr, because it's a martyr to us, all right, it was what he needed to do. Because what happened afterwards was what was really amazing. Because in the first day it was terrible. People, even if they were being interviewed, were just emotionally distraught. By the second day, Fox started bringing on the people that work in Turning Point, the kids. And I could see that okay, they lost their leader, but they're not leaderless. And one of the things that's pointed out over and over again about Charlie is the people he attracted and how capable they are. So as I listened to these people, and we're not going to give up, we're going to carry on, and it was very positive. Yes, they were hurting terribly, but they were already engaged in, well, first off, what happened by the second day is that they had a tremendous amount of donations coming into to the business, and you had. When Charlie would go out and he'd talk to the people, he'd say, if you want to get engaged, go to Turning Point and sign up. And if there isn't one in your area, we will help you create one, a center. So he's always reaching out and always promoting, Turning Point. Well, one of the people who's part of the business said, they were absolutely shocked because of the hundreds of thousands of people who are signing up online to become part of this. And the people that were chosen by Charlie. Charlie, you couldn't get into this is my understanding. You couldn't get into the company to work really for the company unless Charlie approved you. And I think that's part of the gift that he was given on this journey is to find the right people. That people would flock to you, but find the right people out of the people flocking to you. So Turning Point is like overwhelmed with support right now because people have started listening to him, even if they listened to him before, they're really listening to him, they're hearing what he's saying. And it's motivating them. It's lighting a fire in them and giving them a way to go. In other words, I don't think these people were sitting around, I've got this fire in me. I need some place to go. I think the fire was lit by this story and by engaging with the energy that Charlie puts out in all those videos. You can watch him, probably for days. So it's instilled in a huge number of kids the belief in themselves, in the belief that they can make a difference in the world. And to me, and Ani and Jan, we all saw the same thing, that he was on a mission of God to create this thing, and now to make it something that is going to be more powerful than most people can even fathom. He had to die for it. They had to show evil. This is what we're fighting against. And instill that it's a strength. And as far as his wife goes, I was one of the questions that was asked by to one of the people that are in the business. Did Charlie ever, when he was alive, talk about his successor? And the person answering the question said, no, but that wouldn't have happened because If you ask Charlie, who can, succeed you? Who could replace you, Charlie? He would say, you.
It's actually Benny, you have to die for Israel Shapiro, who's taking over TPUSA. So that came out, I think, yesterday.
Don't believe everything you hear, Callius. His wife has got it. There was no doubt in anybody's mind that I was talking to after hearing her, was that she isn't on the same mission that he was on. They
True,
didn't.
yeah. I mean the estate has to be settled and all that before any handover can take place,
It
but
doesn't matter. You don't have to hand it over in an official way.
Benny stepped in and said, "I'm going to go ahead and do it," which I thought was fitting, which was predictable. But you're right. No, I think his wife will probably keep it. But yeah, for now, I mean, that was the latest regarding the future of TPUSA.
Not to worry. The kids have it. She knows that. That was one of the things she brought out. He's surrounded by wonderful people that can do this by themselves. But I am going to guarantee that Charlie's name will live forever. And, the amount of strength that she had, I mean, you can either buy into the love that she was demonstrating. The connectedness, the fact that while she was giving the speech, she was talking to Charlie. And she said, "Please come to this." She said, "We're not going to stop the events that we've got planned. They're going on, and please come to them." And one in particular, I don't remember which one it was. She reached out to the parents and she said, "Please, parents, adults, come to this. Bring your kids." And she said, "I will appreciate it. Turning Point will appreciate it. And so won't Charlie, because Charlie will be there." So he's something. Yes, you did feel a shift, but it was a shift in spirituality. He gave kids the permission to speak their minds, to feel not that they're victims, but to feel that they're important, that they can make a difference. And the other reason that I can articulate this and understand it totally was what happened again back in 1970 when the U.S. National Guard killed students on Kent State. If you didn't live through it, you have no idea what happened. At the University of Massachusetts, where at the time I was a senior, but I was also a voting member of the faculty. Long story. And I did not feel like I wanted to get radically engaged in any of this because of my position in the university. I wasn't trying to protect myself. I was trying to protect the history department because of this weird relationship we had. And I just wanted to understand it and to observe it. So they had taken over the student union. And in the student union, they had this whole top floor was office after office, and they were mostly, you'd have classes and stuff in these rooms. They set up control places where they could contact different universities, different colleges all over the United States. There was one room that was a command center, and this is where I parked myself. I don't know what they thought I was doing, but all I did was sit there and watch it. And these people at the control, that particular place, they were in telephone communication continually with Berkeley University. Berkeley and the University of Massachusetts organized, and within virtually days, every major university and every major college in the United States had shut down. This scared the black hats, the people that are in control, absolutely freaked them out. And they were so scared that they upped the planning of taking over by mind control, the 5G, everything. Exploded at that time because they realized that as well as they thought they had things under control, no, they did not. All right. And I mean, at that point, especially at that point, we were protesting, and I was part of the protest against the Vietnam War. We were protesting that war. That's the only thing most people even knew about. I mean, I had a larger expanse of understanding, the problems of capitalism, and I was a Russian expert in college, Russian society, politics. And I understood the fallacy of communism and the problems and the whole things that go wrong. And they've always gone wrong. It's part, you can't do it. So I was looking at it that way, but most kids didn't. All they knew is they wanted to get out of that war. They had had family members or friends that had gotten killed over there. They were motivated by a very, very specific target. So in this case, we have another specific target that's being looked at. It's the same thing, but it's much bigger. Because once this whole thing, everybody shut down, what they did was that instead of holding classes, they were holding talks. People were getting up and they were talking about the things that, had happened, that because even though everything was terrible, and we knew that capitalism was really bad because the rich people just put you down, you never have a way out, and blah, 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 blah. Well, the problem here is that people from labor, people from the Black Panthers, all these different really outside fringe groups began to come to these universities and give talks. Sometimes just in like cat classrooms, all the classrooms kept there. They still went to class, but it wasn't the same subject. And sometimes the outdoor events. I remember one time there was somebody from the Black Panthers that was on stage in an outdoor event, and the wind blew, and his jacket, he was dressed in a suit type thing, and it, and his jacket blew open, and they saw a gun. Everybody started screaming "gun," and I thought that they were gonna tar and feather this guy. He was forced off the stage and basically walked to his car by a contingency of the people there. All right, now what really scared the dark side was that there was an within this rebellion against Kent State. What they did was that they, at the University of Massachusetts, they organized everybody to march on the bank of Amherst. Most of the kids had their money in the Amherst Bank, so they marched, and I marched with them. I went down. I took the walk. It was a mile, just a mile, but we walked to the bank, and all those people that had bank accounts there took out $1. And they said to the bankers when they did this, "We'll be back for the rest of it if something doesn't happen." So they threatened the banks. All of a sudden, if they had done that, they could have put a run on the Amherst Bank. And that scared the crap out of them. Now, one of the reasons that I'm mentioning this is that when I was in the military, I was with Army Intelligence, but we were in another, the top echelon of the Army Intelligence is equivalent to NSA. It's the cryptology group, and that's where I belonged. We would listen to the enemy signals, okay, SIGINT, listening to everything, radar, radio, television, everything. It was, continually listening to the other guy, in this case, the Soviet Union. And we're at a get together, and I'm talking to people, and the master sergeant of the company that I was with, he sits down beside me and he said, "You went to the University of Massachusetts, didn't you?" And I was kind of stunned by it. And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Were you there when they made the run on the bank?" And I said, "Yeah." I mean, I'm going like, how does he know this? Because this never got in the papers. It was never televised or anything. And he said, "Because I was there." He said, "I want you to know something." He said, "You probably saw the cameras. CBS, ABC, NBC were there." I said, "I saw CBS and NBC. I didn't see the other one." And he said, "Well, they got there. They were going to film it, but we got there and we took the film out of the cameras and told them to pretend they were filming." All right. And I was like, holy crap. I mean, so even though it scared the bejesus out of the bureaucracy, they actually had such control that they were able to stop these cameras from even recording it. And that's why nobody knows about it. But that scared them. So like I say, 2 years ago, I realized that if John Kennedy had not died, the dark side would have continued doing the things that they do, only there wouldn't be somebody like me who could see what they were doing now. And I was not alone. In the beginning, I was alone because we didn't have the internet. And most of us were young. We didn't even have the, publisher. I wrote a book about it. Who Killed Kennedy? I wrote it. The John Kennedy Jesus Christ Connection. And I wrote it. I told the story, the way it happened, why it happened, everything about it. And I put it out to be published. And every company that I put it out to said, no. But this young person in Berkeley, not Berkeley. Yeah, I no, what's the name? I'm trying to remember the, anyway, it was a pretty well known publishing house. And he was very, very excited about it. And then a few days after he had called me and talked to me about it and everything, and he was very excited about it. He said, "I'm only going to tell you the truth." He said, "My publishers, when I showed him the book, they told me that you would never be published in the United States." I said, "Thank you very much." And I gave up trying to publish it. So we didn't have the internet. If I had had the internet then, I would have put it out on the internet, which I finally did when we did get the internet. And that was very funny because this was, again, very early in the game, about 92. And I put the book in segments. It wasn't like you can do now, but the information was out there. And I was watching, that at that time, I was watching, I think it was Good Morning America. And they had, it was probably around the anniversary of the assassination. And somebody in the, on that show said, "Yeah, there's somebody on the internet saying that the Freemasons were involved in the Kennedy assassination." And I came right out of my chair. I said, "There's only one person out there that is me that's saying that." So, yeah, I got publicized, but did they bring me on? Did they talk to me? Did they ask me any questions? No, they just, "If somebody thinks it's Freemasons, poof it off." So even back in 92, there were people like me who had the information on the internet, but we weren't connecting. I didn't know about anybody else. They didn't know about me. Nowadays, everybody knows about everybody and who's who and what's what. And, that's just where we're at now. So if we didn't lose John Kennedy, there wouldn't have been people that from for 60 years were saying, "Guys, there's a problem here. You better pay attention." We wouldn't have been there. The voices wouldn't have been there. And they would have taken over everything because nobody was seeing it coming at them. And in this day and age, right now, where we're at, we need another event that will absolutely inspire the young people. And because I saw what they did with Kent State, their reaction to Kent State, Oh, wait, I just want to point this out, and then I'll get off the public. I have been like in the military for 12 years when I retired. Well, I didn't retire, resigned, but I was 12 years in the military. I was at the top echelon of the military intelligence and the various. All I was involved with the highest echelons of the army. Let me put it to you that way. I went to briefings. I gave briefings. I have never seen a command center. I used to play war games where I'm running a command center. I never could get a command center to run like I saw run at the University of Massachusetts. Every person was absolutely synchronized by with everybody else. It was the most amazing example of a mission and the execution of that mission. They wanted to close down the schools and education system across the nation, and they did. They absolutely did. And I was talking with one of the professors that I was, I'm part of the history department. And we were talking about the Kent State thing, and somehow or another, I don't remember exactly how it got there, but he looks at me and he says, "Don't bother applying to graduate school here." And I said, "Why not?" And he said, "Because we have been waiting for you to graduate. You will never get back in the school." So we were up against something that was so big. It was already that infested with the belief system, don't let anybody who's telling you the truth to speak. But now they can't keep it silent. By killing him, more and more people are going to hear his message. And his message was one of love and one of compassion and one that believed in humanity and believed in the kids. And trust me, I believe in the kids. So if anybody had any doubts out there of where we're going or what this means, what it means is that we're in a spiritual battle and Charlie's going to help us win it. And his wife and all the people that are running Turning Point USA. And that is an amazing name. You want to talk synchronicities? There's so much synchronicities in everything that Charlie did. So yes, he was controlled, he was programmed, he was all those names that you want to try to give him, but it was by spiritual energy that wants us to win the spiritual battle. So that's my story. I could go on, but I'm not gonna.
I only have a couple things. I want to hand it over to Mark, and we haven't heard from him at all really today. So I just wanted to add that yes, I will agree that there are spiritual forces at play. I'm not deaf to those things. I just don't think they are what we think they are. I think I know what they are, but the things that Turning Point USA and Charlie Kirk especially were advocating for were highly contentious. And he was essentially a mouthpiece for the Zionist Israeli government. And that's undeniable to me. There's no getting around that fact. And so you have this interesting dynamic, this clear dynamic to me, going on with college campuses. You have this sort of Zionist conservative approach, which, let's face it, most of, neocon Republicans and MAGA are now 100% Zionist, in my opinion. So you have the Zionist mouthpiece talking, Charlie Kirk, at college campuses. Now, what sort of ideologies are being presented on college campuses? Well, mostly Bolshevik. And so it's you have these two lanes, these two tunnels of thought colliding on college campuses. And so for me, as far as the spiritual battle goes that you were alluding to, I don't think Charlie Kirk initially was on the right side. I think what he was advocating for and what he was trying to defend was, to me, inexcusable. And I can't get around that personally. Lately, before all this happened, he was starting to come around. He was starting to go, wait a minute, maybe I'm not talking towards the right things. Maybe I'm not publicly supporting the right things. And he actually, from what I've heard from a couple of sources, was that he was beginning to realize the sort of trouble he was in if he wanted to get out. And he expressed fear. And so, I 100% think that he was kind of in the middle of this spiritual battle going on. And I think he was on the wrong side for a large part of it. And I think, and it's possible, I'm not sure. I haven't really explored the Israeli ties to any of this. From what I've seen so far, I'm not 100% convinced that the Israeli government killed them. But from what I have seen, Israeli newspapers were the first to report on his death. I think a tweet went out from Netanyahu moments after it. And they were the first to actually say anything about the incident, which is suspect, which is sus, in my opinion. But I do think he was, a mouthpiece for a part of the spiritual war, but I don't think he was on the right side for long stretches. Now, he might have been coming around. I honestly think he was beginning to notice things and was having a change of heart, which is great. It was something that, I think is a natural consequence of, the obvious world we live in. I think he began to see things for what they were and began to take a different tone. And it's entirely possible that those forces didn't want to lose him. And so, boom, they go ahead and get rid of him. And which also serves their interest as well going forward. That's why I mentioned earlier that what comes next is more important, I think, for all of us. So, yeah, no, I 100% think that, yeah, we are in the midst of a spiritual thing. And it's all energy, it's all attention, it's all direction. And they control the algorithms, so they've got full run on how we respond, and in turn how they respond, the sort of Hegelian dialect, so to speak. So yeah, what do
Okay.
you think, Mark?
Well, before Mark speaks, I want to say something back to you about that. You have admittedly said what others are saying. You have not heard, you have not listened to the, 10 years of Charlie Kirk talking. You're taking somebody's opinion, somebody's interpretation, and making a statement like you made. I recommend that if you're going to go to that point, that you go and you listen to Charlie. Why did the Netanyahu, why was he the first to announce it? I don't know that he beat Trump, but why was he? Because he had a personal relationship with Charlie Kirk. He knew Charlie. He knew his wife. They had
Exactly.
visited.
Exactly. That's part of my
Okay,
point.
so but see again, I don't know enough about the subject. I mean, I've got people that are absolutely believe what you believe. Okay, the Zionist movement, I don't like the Zionist movement, but that they think that Netanyahu is part and partial of, this whole thing. And I don't know. They've got reasons for saying it, but I don't know. I don't know what's in the man's head. All right? But I, again, is. Within it was the first day he came on Fox Network to talk about this, and he's either a very, very good actor, which he could be, or he was talking from his heart. And so all I can tell you is that what I see you doing in your presentation is you're taking the words and thoughts of others, and Charlie wouldn't want you to do that. Take those people and think about what they're saying, but don't make it your own until you've done the research, until you've listened to them. You can probably do a search, Charlie Kirk, Zionist statements, and you can probably find out all sorts of things that would support your statements. I don't know. I have not seen that. But I admittedly, I've not followed the man, Ani Avedisian never missed a podcast of his or an event. She knew him better than anybody else I know. And she said, I have a difference between his opinion of Zionism and Israel than he does. And she said, "I have a different opinion about, the Jesus religion." She said, "But the man was so on about so many other things." So, it's everybody's own decision to make. But as Charlie would say, think for yourself. Don't believe somebody. I mean, I have not turned on social media, period. Because I knew all the bullshit would happen. Why do I have a radio station that could have been one of the biggest forever? Because I was in the two biggest when I decided to produce by myself. I was offered some of the big names out there, produce me, and I turned them all down. Why? Because I knew I'd seen it, I'd been part of it. Where you're talking to we had the two biggest audiences in the world. There wasn't anybody competing with us. Revolution Radio and Wolf Spirit. They had been set up by super soldiers. There was nobody out there. They were in the technology. They understood it. They put it out there first. Now you've got, hundreds of thousands of people that are out there. But listen to them. They don't know everything. I don't know everything. Listen to people, get their thoughts, but to make them your own, do your own research. That's all I'm going to say right now. Mark, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I mean, I do agree a lot with what you said of the connections of these. I mean, assassinations, whether faked or not, the agenda of what was to move forward either way is moving forward. That's critical to, you can't have this. I'm not talking about you guys, but, and I know your generalization of social media, but there are accounts there that follow it, follow the documentation. Like, for example, I think it was the wife that was doing that speech. Why would she say he's still a good man? I mean, that's one thing. I'm leaning po towards the thing that the shot was fake. Like, why is this thing blasted everywhere? Let me read the exact quote. Let me see. Oh, I'll just kind of go with what I've been finding. So while everybody was distracted with what happened, there's an account I follow, Raphael O'Neill, and she pointed this Substack out. The Wine Press News. Congress passes $900 billion defense bill to modernize military and send money to other countries while everyone was distracted with Charlie Kirk's death. There's that. I mean, regardless of where the media is coming from, if something is that blasted in your face, what is it that they're not telling us for any kind of story, whether you're on their side or not? Let me see another thing I found. Things are coming up. And then there's Donald Trump Jr. Misspelling assassinated. Like, why would you do that on purpose, especially at a time like this? I mean, that's offensive. And also, like, what is the point? And then a good account to follow is Rattletrap 1776, because there's all the documentation and the two books and the pictures of Charlie Kirk, of recent and way back then. So it's not even the same person. I mean, these are just, I mean, I'm just asking people to suspend disbelief. Flex your belief. Don't get taken up with the emotions, the peer pressure, the peer approval, and the dream sharing that's going on. I mean, even if it was real, like, what is the psychological operation? And the fact that it happened the day before 9/11 and also around the time of the light rail killing of that Ukrainian. And there's a lot of discrepancies there, too. People can follow the Kate Daly show. She's really good, an investigative reporter, very experienced, breaking down all the inconsistencies there. Of the videos and the photos, like, what, and then it's three big events, so there's definitely some kind of hypnosis going on. But Nancy, I do agree with what you're saying that his message is like even deeper and worldwide out there, and the kind of multi-dimensional war. I mean, me and Kelly's have understood the kinds of invisible wars that have been happening since the 80s, and just how these things have been ramped up. And there's definitely more empowerment and inspiration given to people because of Charlie Kirk's message. And there is, I mean, I understand your take on your addressing of social media in general, but there are clips out there of him saying that he, what do you say? Something about, like, he cannot talk about Israel as much as normal people can because of his position. So he's more censored. And he was, there are clips of him being more vocal about. The things happening, not just in Gaza, but what's been going on, the controversy and all that stuff. So people definitely look at all sides and come to your own conclusion. I mean, things are in flux with everybody's emotion, and how do we detach from that and get a clearer vision? And Nancy and Kalos gave us some great tools for taking things forward, and especially with things happening behind our backs. I don't know, you guys want to
Yeah,
out
I
this
want to
way?
comment on your comment concerning you saw a clip. Well, I saw clips of Donald Trump saying things that he didn't say. And all you have to do is take that extra step. Okay, where'd this clip come from? I want to see the whole thing.
Yeah, I
Until you
agree.
know exactly the context that the man talked in, anybody who's listening to a clip is an idiot. It's not going to get you anywhere. It's going to show you a second, a few seconds, a minute in time where they said something. It doesn't mean that that means whatever anybody is interpreting it to mean. You see what I'm saying? I'm a researcher. I've been doing this for a long time. If I had built my reputation on clips, I'd be wrong. But I've never been proven wrong in anything I have said in any of my books. Why? Because I go the extra step. I go back to where this, okay, who are you? I want to see you. I want to see the writing. I want to know your history. Where are you coming from before you make a claim like that? Especially if I look at the clip and I go, that's not what he said. That's a part of what he was saying, not what he said. So again, I have hesitations about people looking at all these clips.
Yeah, no, I again, like you said, with social media, and I understand. I mean, I graduated media, so not that doesn't mean anything. And I've always operated of context over content. So obviously, okay, there's the clip. What is the bigger picture of what they're saying, especially in very emotional and controversial times like these? So totally with you there. And not
But
to take any of our word for it.
you gotta go listen to it yourself. You know, you
Yeah,
can't.
I agree.
You know, when I was I was a substitute teacher for a while, and I had an English class, and it was the teacher was sick, I was out, and it was some poem we were talking about, and so I asked one of the students, well, what's your interpretation of what are you thinking here? And he starts out and he's telling me, well, maybe it was this and maybe it was that. And I said, how do you know? And he said, well, I read it. And I said, that's right, you read it. You do not know what's in the mind of the man. You only know what he wrote. And there is a difference there. Because when I, as a writer, a published writer, I'm not sure, I am a writer, but I've been a writer all my life. When I'm writing, I'm very much aware of my reader. You know, if I'm trying to teach somebody something, in a nonfiction environment, I want to give them the facts that will lead them to the same conclusion I came to. But there's no way that anybody can say the writer said this and so it means this. No, you have interpreted. See, this is the beauty of it, is each of us interpret what we hear, what we read. We never know what was actually meant. And that's where you have to have a lot of database to get a picture of what's the overall messaging that seems to be coming from this person. That's what they must have thought about. And the best way of finding out what a writer thinks is to go back and read about the writer. Who's their friends? Where they did? What they did? What's their habits? I mean, that type of thing. You can get a better feeling for what the writer might have meant, but actually reading or hearing somebody speak, you only hear that. And then you make an interpretation of it, but you don't know what the person actually meant. And I know this because I've been doing this for so long. Is, I'll say something, and then somebody will tell me that I said something, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going like, I never said that. Right? And then where did you hear me say that? And most of the time, they don't even know. But when they do, I go back and I go, I didn't even come close to saying that. But people hear what they think they hear, what they want to hear, what they're afraid of hearing. So it's a tricky thing when you're doing this kind of work. And the best thing I can tell anybody, everybody out there, look at everything, take it under consideration, and then use your intuition. Use what feels right, what's true. I think that this is more true than that's true. Because in the end, the only thing we have is ourselves. And we've got to have a visceral, physical connection to truth. That when it's bogus, you know it's bogus. And when it's true, you know it's true. And sometimes you can't even defend your position except for the fact that you know it is true or you know it is bogus. And you'll find people, I've got some friends of mine, and they'll say, I never trusted that person. And I'm going like, well, gee, I did. Because I look at people differently. I see what they can be. I'm always looking towards the good person, you know, the good in people. It's not what they're saying or what they're doing. I look at the good people. And where did that come from? I don't know. I was born with it. I was brought up with it. You know, everybody's special. They have a special message. But can we always know what that messaging is? No, because we have a special message. We may know have to know something that other people don't know because of our special mission. And that mission was decided by us. You know, I go back to Ani Avedisian. We are spiritual beings having a experience in 3D reality. It's all a game. It's all learning. It's all, what if this happened and what if that happened? And there's timelines and there's people mucking with, there is so much out there that anybody that tells me they know what's happening, you better take another look because it morphs. You know, different stories are true at different times. It's an amazing place to be. But, and it's like, you know, I respect what you guys, you know, your hesitations about Charlie. I have none. I watched the kid as a 16-year-old growing up. I've never seen anything except advancement in his, you know, ability to and his knowledge. And I have a high respect for him. And I choose to believe that Charlie is what we think he is, a spiritual being that had a mission. And that mission is continuing through all the people that have now been energized by his martyrship, martyring. So, you know, and I'm glad we had this conversation because there's people out there that, you know, need to hear it.
Yeah, I don't have hesitation with what he said. Like his thing was very traditional, conservative, and straightforward. And yeah, I mean, if that's the direction you want to go, then great. No hesitation on that. And totally agree where experience over opinion, absolutely, and context over content. I mean, beyond the things you're talking about, we're in the age of Photoshop and AI, and anything could be made of anything easily. And a little homework for people out there. There is a government pocket guide. Let me see, of unconventional warfare. It's free. Govinfo.gov, unconventional po warfare pocket guide. And in there, they do have a hierarchy pyramid of steps of this. And one of the in the bottom part of that pyramid is assassination, forming favorable public opinion, advocating national cause, creation of distrust of established institutions, and say like 10 levels up is increased violence, terror, and sabotage. So that's a good guide to see where things are kind of headed, a general guideline, if you will. So
And
that's
also,
from
too, I would also recommend looking into the principles of fifth generation warfare.
Oh
There's
yeah,
quite
big
a
time.
few.
And six
There's
too.
exactly, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of university level papers that exist regarding these concepts. So definitely look into those.
Yeah, sixth gen warfare. I got that from Bards FM. It deals with obviously the digital age of different AI wars, which Cypress Parsa, which he's been on Radio 5G Cosmic Soup years ago. That was a great show. And he foresaw all of this AI stuff coming and what's going on in social media, these kinds of tensions. And seventh gen war, I suppose, would be more multidimensional of the kind of gods and religions people have. They're fighting against each other of that.
Yeah, the premises of at least fifth generation warfare. I'm not too familiar with sixth gen just yet, but fifth gen is mostly control of the individual through the info war, essentially. That's my best synopsis in a short sentence to describe it. It all comes down to controlling the individual, and then through the individual, they can control a mass. And so that's mainly the premise, and they do it through various other means, through health, through psychology, on and on and on. But definitely look into these concepts.
All right. That was pretty
Or
good show.
don't look into them and just feel it through. I go back to we're spiritual beings. We know the answers.
Yeah, go
We have,
internally, go inside.
go internal. We've got connection to our higher self.
But
Because you,
even that can be hijacked, I think, these days.
well, I disagree with you there. From the standpoint of, I said, we are in touch with our higher selves. Is there an operation ongoing to keep get us, getting the connection broken? Yes, it's called vaccine. It's called 5G. Yes, they're trying to break us from that connection, and they're doing a damn good job of it.
And chemtrails too. Catherine Fitz said in the Marin County meet and greet up here in San Francisco that what they put in the stratospheric aerosolization, as per the CFR speech of John Brennan, yeah, they put the shots in there. According to Fitz, she was talking about that. And I think Dr. Henry Ely, they're doing a Healing of Ages next month with Dr. Group. Couple other doctors, and actually Dr. Gerald Pollack too. They're doing the talk of this whole thing, and the guest we're supposed to have on, his product is the Relax Sauna, and a lot of these people, these doctors I mentioned and their friends, have the sauna because it's far infrared. So I do endorse and have recommended the product because it's far infrared, which gets in deep in the skin and ejects those things out. On heavier chemtrail days, the metal toxicity level internally is way higher. And Henry Ely covered that in his Dr. Henry Ely in his podcast interviews. But definitely check that one out. As far as one of the best ways to chelate out metals is through sweating and far infrared. So and it goes beyond a regular sauna. And Phil Wilson has tons of presentations and interviews on YouTube there, so I've always recommended his stuff because I have one at home and use it like twice a week. Back to you guys.
Okay, so we'll wrap this up here, I guess, unless you got something else you want to say. But why don't you tell people about your upcoming show? You got a guest coming on, you hope?
We hope. I'm still trying to get in touch to the guests. Awaken and War. Either way, we're with no guests. We're going to be talking about InfoWars had this guest Ashton Forbes of that we are the disclosure and the things of plasma physics and electromagnetodynamics is out there. The papers are there, and a lot of black ops physicists and scientists he's talked to. And they've released various patents and papers, scientific papers that he showed in his podcast, Hard Truth. And we're, one of the guys, I think it's Salvatore Pace, he's been on the show four times. We're going to be talking about his recent appearance and how that relates to, Pace calls it intuitive physics. And to me, that's basically consciousness technology, which we've been talking about on the various shows here, Cosmic Reality, and specifically our own, The Awake versus Aware. So if the guest doesn't show up, that's what we're talking about. If the guest shows up, it's about the same stuff, but more focused on the guest's experience with that. Thank you, Nancy.
Okay, then. So, I do highly recommend that anybody that's interested in the kind of conversation we just had that you listen to Say What. I will have a link in the podcast notes and on Rumble. Thank you both for being so open and willing to discuss, because that's what it's all about. You know, Charlie had a thing. He said, you know, if you stop talking, that's when the violence happens. So we need to talk more. We need to, it's like, yes, I am very, I'm very, I know what I think. I know how I operate. I'm very, yes, this is what I believe in. But I also am willing to listen to the other side, because I don't go through life needing to be right. I go through life needing to know. And there's a lot of difference in that. You know, because if you know that, that's why I was impressed with his wife. Because whether you believe what she believes, and you know, that Charlie's in heaven with Jesus and all of that, she knows that. So in some way, that's a real, real thing for all I know. I don't, I you know, I think that Jesus was an ascend being, but you know, the religions and all the things that come with it, no, it's not my cup of tea. But I respect people, because once you, I remember my brother, one day, we're adults, and my brother said, well, I gotta tell you, it's a good thing I was Catholic. And I said to him, why would you say that? And he said, well, because they told me Jesus was always looking, and I didn't do a lot of things that I shouldn't have done because I thought Jesus was looking. You know, so anyway, yeah, and just realize that you're not alone out there. You know, find yourself people that are with you. Don't look at the stuff that makes you angry. If it makes you angry, there's something wrong with it. You know, you just, anger is not what we were built to do. So anyway, thank you both. We'll now go to the ending of this show, and we'll have another show after this, and hopefully I'll get them up in a short period of time. Thanks everybody for being there for us, and you guys want to say bye?
Yeah, thanks everybody. Agree with Nancy. It's what's to know and also what is most useful, and to test everything, believe nothing, as some of my older mentors have said. Thank you.
Kelly's? Is he here? Did he leave us?
It may have stepped out. It's all good. We had a
All
great
right.
show.
All right.
Thank you, Nancy.
Thanks. We'll talk to you later. Be safe out there. Appreciate you.
You've been listening to Radio 5G, a production of CosmicReality.com. Thank you for listening.